Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Monday, September 12, 2016. On ProWrestling.net today, Will Pruitt's pause review of WWE Backlash, my Backlash hit list. Jim Ross offers some high praise for a top WWE wrestler. And of course, you can join me tonight for live coverage of WWE Raw, beginning with the pre-show coverage at 6:30 Central. Non-members, coming up after this break, I will discuss WWE Backlash, CM Punk's UFC 203 fight, and we'll look ahead to tonight's WWE Raw. WWE Backlash was a solid show. Jake Barnett and I both agreed in last night's audio review that it was a solid B. I think the best thing about the SmackDown brand is, aside from the fact that they're not burdened by a third hour like Raw is, it's really that the creative team is doing as much as they can with the limited roster that they have to work with. And, there's a couple of exceptions. There's a couple of guys that I do a little bit more with than they do, but it seems like they've identified their core group and they're really doing a good job with them. And the Backlash show itself is a little bit shorter than usual, but not so short that it would be offensive to anybody who paid for the actual pay-per-view, and yes, those people are still out there, and I'm actually much more offended by WWE giving us a one-hour kickoff show. Why not just give us a 30-minute kickoff show and simply move the Baron Corbin and Apollo Crews match to the main show to help fill out the rest of that time if they feel like that's an issue? But I just don't need an hour of Booker T, Jerry Lawler, and Lita breaking down the matches and showing video packages, but I digress. AJ Styles winning the championship last night, I felt was the right move. In fact, I think they got it right with two of the three, and maybe even all three, of the championship matches that they had, or at least title changes, if you will, in the main event, and then the crowning of the first ever champions in the tag division and the women's division. Now, when it comes to Styles and Ambrose, they could have dragged that feud out. They easily could have, but I suspect they're still going to in the form of, like, Ambrose rematches. I mean, I don't think we've seen the last of this as far as it being a pay-per-view type match. AJ Styles has momentum, and I like that they had Ambrose drop the title on the same night where it turned out there's no way to know this, but fans started to kind of turn on him. And I do think it was more about those fans wanting to see AJ Styles win it than it was them disliking Ambrose. Like, if Ambrose had been facing pretty much anybody else on this show, I think those same fans probably would have been cheering him. So I don't think they're rejecting Dean Ambrose all of a sudden. We just haven't seen any real signs of that leading up to this point. But I am curious to see if that dynamic continues in those rematches, and whether Ambrose suffers at all. Sometimes that booing can be contagious, even if it's just they're cheering for the guy they like and booing for the guy that they want to win less, even if they don't dislike him. But we'll see. The other championship matches, Becky Lynch winning the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship, and I felt like it was the right move in retrospect. I wasn't quite sure going into it what they would do. She gives the championship credibility, more so than an Alexa Bliss or a Carmella would. Nikki Bella just wasn't the right person to win that championship for her in that, she's a babyface now. And if they put the title back on her, we already had a lengthy Nikki Bella Divas Championship reign. And then if you go right back to her in this slot, there's already going to be some grumbling. Oh, she's John Cena's girlfriend, so of course she's going to get this. And whether that's fair or not, I think that you would have heard more of it had she come out of this. I think it's better for her as a babyface to not hold that championship anytime soon. And Becky is just a very, very good wrestler who can have good matches with the other five women on the roster. Gosh, I hope WWE can find some more female talent. The only one I really question is the tag team championship. And I know, hey, they paid off the Heath Slater and Rhino storyline by giving Heath Slater the big win, and now he has his contract, so we don't have to hear about the contract stuff anymore. They had some fun with this, working in Heath's family and all the double wide talk and all of that. And it's fine. I mean, I give them credit for making Heath Slater matter. I like that. He's a guy that we've said for quite a while, well, they could do something with him. He may not be world champion material, but they could do more than just make him the guy you kind of roll your eyes at he can entertain you at times, but as far as like him in the ring, you just kind of rolled your eyes because you knew what the outcome of his matches were going to be. And it's like, do a little something. And they did. And they managed to get people to care about Rhino. That's not easy to do in 2016. I mean, he had a little bit of momentum in NXT, and then it just kind of quickly faded. But this is fun use of Rhino, and so I give them credit. Where I question it a little bit is simply in that the Usos just turned heel. And I think the money program in SmackDown is the Usos against American Alpha. And someone will say, well, it doesn't need the tag team titles. I think it I think you want your best teams feuding over the tag titles. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Usos take those titles from Slater and Rhino soon. And so, if that's the case, if they just, let's say they SmackDown on Tuesday, they end up taking the titles, or just sometime, at the, even the next paper SmackDown pay-per-view, fine. You know, I think that's where you can do this briefly, but I just didn't like seeing the Usos lose so quickly into a heel run, because I think this should be a good one. I mean, they started off with a loss in a matter of seconds to American Alpha, and I think if the Usos are going to be the top heels of the brand, which I'd be shocked if they weren't, I think they need a little bit of credibility. I mean, they've been a good tag team in WWE for a long time, but now they lost in seconds to Alpha, and now they lost to the makeshift team of Heath Slater and Rhino. So hopefully, it's just kind of a bump in the road for the Usos, and they end up with the SmackDown tag title sooner rather than later. .NET members are actually listening to the 74-minute WWE Backlash audio review that Jake Barnett and I recorded last night. The members are also going to be hearing my Q&A audio show later today. If you are interested in membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Once you're in there, you will see the sign-up area. And once you click into the sign-up area, you're going to see three different pricing options. $7.50 will get you in the door for 1 month. However, if you are ready to commit, you can save yourself some money by taking the six-month or annual option. And as I always like to point out, that annual option brings that price down to an average of $5.50 per month. So you're going to actually save yourself $2 a month if you commit to annual membership. Now, I also want to talk about UFC 203. I don't watch a ton of UFC these days. I was a big MMA fan at one point, and then they just started running so many shows that it was really difficult for me to keep up on it. I mean, what I do, obviously, with wrestling, and there's so much wrestling on television now, keeps me very busy. Also have a girlfriend that I want to spend some time with, and she enjoys the occasional UFC, but if I told her I was covering every UFC show on top of wrestling, I don't know that I'd have a girlfriend any longer, but we still do enjoy watching like the bigger UFC events, and I thought this one was kind of a dog of an event, with the exception of the main event, and the Punk fight was entertaining, no doubt about it. Well, it may not have been entertaining in terms of the way it played out, some of you may think it was, but it was still, it was like, whoa, there was a buzz, like, all right, what's going to happen here? It's like, I think a lot of people assumed Punk was going to lose, but you still wanted to see how would they get there? What would Punk do offensively? And I did come away disappointed. I wanted to see the two of them stand up and trade blows for a little bit, and we never get to see a single offensive move from Punk. None. Obviously, you give credit to his opponent, Mickey Gall. And Mickey said afterward that he wanted to work on a stand-up game, but he felt that Punk just came in too hot. He was too aggressive, and so he just let his training take over and kind of dictate what he did from there, which was basically to, all right, he's coming in hot, I'm going to take him down, ground and pound, finish this. And that's what he did. Now, Punk, I know there's plenty of people snickering over Punk losing in dominant fashion, and Dolph Ziggler and The Miz even opened their backlash match by essentially recreating the Punk and Gall fight. I'm in the camp of just giving the guy some credit, despite the lopsided loss. Number one, I mean, this isn't going to be talked about much. I can't go so far as to say like it was a good outing from CM Punk. I mean, what he did manage to do was avoid being choked out for a little bit. I mean, that's as far as I can really go with it. But where I give him credit is just, number one, I heard from so many people on Twitter and elsewhere leading up to this, or just, during this couple-year span, saying he's never actually going to fight. It's not going to happen. And just were adamant about it. And just, fans just were convinced, like, this is a ruse, or he's just, he's stringing people along, he's not going to fight. Nothing else, he proved them wrong. He clearly took this very seriously. He trained hard, and he was simply outclassed. The thing I enjoyed most about CM Punk was just how respectful he was of the sport leading up to the fight, coming out of the fight. Now, that approach probably cost UFC some pay-per-view buys, and that cocky CM Punk may have riled up the MMA fans enough to not just kind of boo him and we don't care. And there was some of that in Cleveland he was in, I think, more cheers and boos, but there were some boos. And I think if he would have worked up the MMA fans, they would have wanted to see this guy get his head taken off by a real MMA fighter, if you will. However you want to classify Mickey Gall. But I found it refreshing that a pro wrestler known for his cockiness was actually really respectful and simply admitted that he was beaten by the better man after the fight. And I wrote on Twitter that night, at Pro Wrestling Ned, that I would feel bad for Punk, but I really did get the feeling that he had a blast doing this, despite losing. And I had one follower, kind of, I don't think he grasped what I was getting at. And we went back and forth for a little bit, friendly as could be, but he just kind of took issue with the fact that I wrote that and said that Punk appeared to be tearing up afterward and didn't enjoy losing. Well, it's like nobody enjoys losing. I mean, you want to win. That's why you play the game or that's why you fight. But I think he enjoyed the hell out of the overall MMA experience. And that includes training, just improving his game. He just spoke about how he likes the MMA lifestyle, how much he enjoyed Fight Week. I mean, I think this is a guy who really had the time of his life. And when this started, I think like a lot of people, I compared this to CM Punk going to MMA Fantasy Camp or UFC Fantasy Camp. And I stand by that because in some ways, this was no different than really going to a baseball fantasy camp. Maybe you hang out with some legends, you get on the field, and I don't know how long those things last. I'm guessing a weekend in most cases, but maybe you're there a week if you want to spend enough money. Whatever the case is, the more you play, the more you're likely to improve your game. Now, imagine if they were to close out that same fantasy camp by letting you take a few swings against like a major league pitching prospect. I don't want to overstate Mickey Gall, so I'm not going to start talking about the best pitchers in baseball or anything, but just, you know, somebody, a prospect, maybe a AAA guy that people are excited about. Chances are you're going to go down swinging, you know, or just not even swing. You're just going to strike out. You're going to stand there and watch three pitches go by and what the hell was that? But, and you're going to wish you made contact. You're going to be disappointed you struck out. But it doesn't mean you're just going to suddenly regret the overall experience that you had. And so I think for Punk, that's the case. I mean, as far as for what's next for him, I assume it hinges on the buy rate to some extent. I mean, Dana White has already stated that he doesn't know if Punk's next fight should be at the UFC level, and I think that's kind of the general feeling of everyone. But I do wonder if Dana's opinion would change if the fight and the fight numbers end up coming in really strong. And, you know, I don't know if I would, I mean, it's given my position, I have to, obviously, but if I were just the average fan, I would have ordered this fight. You know, if I wasn't covering this for a living, I guess is what I'm trying to say, I would have ordered this fight. There was a curiosity there. I wanted to see how Punk would do. And I don't know that I would be compelled to order the next one and let, you know, without there being some sort of a hook or something like that. I don't even know what that hook could be, but I you know, it's like, maybe not. I guess you'd have to kind of wait and see what the build to it is like, something like that. But I know I'd go out of my way to watch Punk fight if he were to end up on Fox. So, I mean, that's a direction they could take as well. But we'll see. I mean, he certainly sounds like he wants to fight again. He has made it, you know, he said that he was initially going to start at the lower level and try to work his way up. But they made him this offer, which turned out to be $500,000 for this fight. Why wouldn't he take it? But, I mean, just listening to him talk afterward, not that he'd show his cards, but I don't get the feeling like pro wrestling is on his mind. I think he, I mean, he said if he's got to, he has to take some time away because basically talking about his wife and how she cooked him a lot of meals and it's his turn to take care of some of the cooking for her, that sort of a thing. But he said if it was just up to him, he'd be back in the gym on Monday. And, you know, he may still continue training right away. He said he's got to wait. Medically, he may not be allowed to because of the, he had some ear damage and then just some bumps and bruises from the fight. So he may not be allowed to get right back in there, but he's still very passionate about it. I don't think this fight just erased all of that. Like, well, tried that, ready to move on to the next phase in life, or go back to the old one. You know, I don't think that's the case, but we'll see. It's going to be very interesting. All right, here are a few things that I'm going to be looking for on tonight's WWE Raw show. Boy, tough competition for them going against the annual ESPN doubleheader. The best thing WWE can hope for is a freaking blowout in the first game, and I don't know if they're going to get it. It's the Redskins facing the Steelers, and then the night game, it's not exactly the most loaded of teams, but it's still NFL football on opening weekend. It's the new Los Angeles Rams facing the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, that one, it is what it is. But I think that first game is the one WWE should be praying for some sort of a lopsided game or something like that. But that's, I'll let them worry about it. The first thing, though, that I'm going to be looking for tonight, obviously WWE is advertising Kevin Owens against Roman Reigns. It's a non-title match, and if Reigns wins, he gets a spot in that Clash of Champions main event. I did it. I didn't say Clash of the Champions. I didn't say Night of Champions. I got it right for once. Thank you. But anyway, obviously, I'm curious to see if Reigns qualifies or they have him lose. But I think the obvious out, if they want Reigns to not be in that match, is for Rusev to interfere so that Reigns and Rusev can pick up their kind of where they left off with their U.S. Championship feud. Rusev, at last check, was advertised for the show on the WWE Live Events page, so it would appear that he and Lana are back from their honeymoon at this point, so don't rule that out. Second, I want to know if Cesaro and Sheamus can keep fans invested in that Best of Seven series they're having, now that it feels, you know, kind of obvious. It doesn't have to be this way, but I kind of assume, like most people, that Cesaro's going to win the next couple of matches, and then the finals of this Best of Seven is going to take place at Clash of Champions. And I almost did it again. But I really think it's as simple as having Cesaro work, you know, from underneath tonight and give Sheamus some believable near falls where he's close to putting things away, and then have Cesaro kind of pull off a comeback win. And then in the sixth match, I just have Cesaro show some real fire right out of the gate, gain momentum, beat Sheamus pretty handily, and then have Sheamus attack him afterward, work over that injured shoulder or the back. I think Cesaro's got multiple injuries they play up. But I would, that way, Cesaro was kind of back in the somewhat underdog role heading into the seventh match. Now, they're the trained pros. We'll see what they come up with. But I just thought I'd throw out how I would approach this if I were WWE. But I am looking forward to you know, what I feel is the likely scenario of Cesaro challenging Kevin Owens, because that's been the approach to this, is that the winner gets a title shot. I don't think they're going to go Kevin Owens and Sheamus, so Cesaro and Kevin Owens could be a lot of fun. The third thing I'm looking forward to on tonight's Raw, I want to know what's happening in the women's division, because Charlotte seems to have two challengers. Bayley beat her in a non-title match last week, and she was previously announced as the challenger of Charlotte at the Clash, but now Sasha Banks stepped up, said she wants her rematch. So are they scrapping the Bayley match? Are they making Sasha wait? Or are they setting up a triple threat? I assume we're going to get some clarity tonight. I don't know that I want a triple threat right out of the gate. You know, I kind of, there's something to, I mean, it's, I don't know. I guess mixed feelings on that one. But I will point out, WWE is playing this up. It's not like they're not aware that they've kind of created a situation with multiple challengers, because their official preview has a headline that reads, Charlotte fights a war on two fronts. They're also playing up Dana Brooke and where things stand with her, given Charlotte's treatment of her recently. Final thing I'm looking forward to on tonight's Raw, well, at least as far as this list is concerned, I want to know how Enzo Amore and Big Cass bounce back from losing to the Shining Stars of all teams last week. Enzo is, you know, he's a strong promo, and he's always just really just a strong promo away from having fans back in their corner. But it's been a while since we've heard a real gem, a memorable promo from Enzo Amore. Not that he's had bad ones, it's just they haven't really given him all that much time, and it just kind of seems, I don't know if they're pulling back. They don't want to overexpose them. Exactly. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm curious to see what he's got. If they give him that time tonight, and if they do, what does he have in store for us? And, you know, I'm not sure that the Shining Stars Tourism Act is really going to provide Enzo with a lot of fun material, but it's Enzo. I mean, hopefully, with his charisma, hopefully he can get the fans right with them. Of course, Cass also eliminated from that four-way match just a couple of weeks ago. So it really does feel like these guys could use a good night to avoid fans kind of starting to look at them in kind of a different light. Tough part is, if they have any plans of going with Enzo and Cass against the Shining Stars at the pay-per-view, then I don't know that you're just going to have Enzo and Cass plow through them. I mean, there's limited number of tag teams on the Raw side right now. And so I'm thinking they're going to try to get something out of this program. But so it's kind of a tricky spot they're in. Hey, finally today, do you want to help us spread the word about this podcast and ProWrestling.net in general? Don't say no. I heard that. Then take a moment to subscribe to the podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. And when I put it out on Twitter again, at ProWrestlingNet, hey, take a quick moment and retweet it. It helps. It really does. I'm going to be back tomorrow with my full-length audio review of WWE Raw, because once Raw's over, I'm watching the football games, even if it is the Niners and the Rams. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Join me for live coverage of Raw tonight. Until then, take care.